The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
You don't know me, but you'll have seen my face. In the earlier pictures, they bludgeoned our features with pixels right down to the waist. Even our hair was too distinctive to disclose. But the story and its protectors grew weary, and in the danker corners of the internet, we became easy to find. Well, that's from the opening of Girl A, the debut novel of Abigail Dean. It's a story which follows the lives of seven siblings as years after their escape from the house of horrors in which they were raised, they must return to that very house. And the author of Girl A, Abigail Dean, is on the line. Abigail, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you, and I love this book. And what is intriguing me about it is that it's about seven siblings, and the dynamics between siblings is very interesting in families. There were five in my own family, for example, but you were an only child, and you took on the task of trying to craft a dynamic between siblings.
Yes. Yeah, I think so part of me thinks that some of it was that kind of lifelong fascination with siblings, almost in my capacity as an outsider, I think. Even as a kid, I was obsessed with books that had big families in them, everything from the Weasley family to the Marches in Little Women. And I think that I was just always so interested in that dynamic where you can kind of want to defend somebody to the death, even when they're driving you crazy. I sort of found that really, really moving in a way. And it was something that I didn't kind of have in my own life. So I think as soon as I was sort of thinking about writing Girl A, I sort of knew it was going to be occupied by this kind of big family with all these different relationships between the siblings, everything from tenderness to real kind of caustic envy and competition.
I've read that you used to invent siblings for yourself as a child.
Yes, yeah. I was definitely one of those kids with a very overactive imagination. So there were definitely some sort of imaginary friends who my parents had to sort of put up with around the house. And I grew up in the Peak District, just sort of outside of Manchester, in a really small village there. So there was quite a lot of free time and sort of quite a lot of time for my imagination to sort of go into overdrive, I think. And that might have been one of the reasons that I sort of started thinking about stories and making up characters who, yeah, my parents sometimes had to, lay a seat for at the table.
Now, you are obviously and now hugely successful novelist with your debut novel, but are you still keeping down that day job?
I am at present, yeah. So my day job is working as a lawyer for Google. A bit similar to Lex, the main character in Girl A, who is also a lawyer, and I sort of spent a lot of time working in a corporate law firm. But unlike Lex, I found that a really challenging lifestyle. I really struggled with the hours, and I struggled with the kind of life being led in meeting rooms and departure lounges. And so I'm sort of very much happier now working for Google. And it's strange. I think that although a lot of people will say, well, legal writing is so different from fiction writing, I find that there are these kind of similarities in a way in thinking about the sort of impact of every word and how that might land with a court, or how it might land with a different reader. I think that sort of kind of attention to detail for language has really helped my writing, actually, that I've sort of picked up in my time as a lawyer.
Now, people will wonder about the title Girl A, but Girl A is called that There's also girl B and girl C. There's boy A, boy B, boy C, boy D, because the siblings are identified initially by these initials only to protect them from the public gaze. But of course, we do get to know them throughout the book. I don't know how much you want to tell us about the plot of the book, but effectively, we are talking about children who were held captive by their parents in childhood, and it becomes clear that Lex, girl A, makes good her escape. Now, tell us more.
Yes, so Lex is kind of known as girl A, the girl who escaped from this house and managed to free her six brothers and sisters and kind of expose her parents' crimes that were taking place in the House of Horrors. And girl A actually opens 15 years after Lex's escape, by which point she sort of, in her 30s, she really does everything she can to avoid thinking about that time and thinking about the past, to the extent that she lives in New York, far away from the sort of Northern England landscape where she grew up. And it's Lex's mother's death in prison at the beginning of the novel that essentially summons her back to the UK and forces her to reconnect with her brothers and sisters to decide the fate of the House of Horrors, the fate of the family home where she grew up and where each of the children sort of suffered in different ways. So I think Girl A is really about how the shared childhood of the Gracie family has shaped each of them, how each of them have kind of coped and failed to cope with everything that happened to them. And I think it's kind of also a question for Lex in terms of how much has she really left her childhood behind. And I think that's a sort of question that almost everyone thinks about throughout their life. You know, how much can you leave behind what the events that shaped you and your family?
Now, obviously, because there are seven siblings, they are of varying ages. Boy A, Ethan, firstborn, last to be adopted. And that tells us that each of the children found a new way, found a different family, found a new life. And the youngest, being still effectively a baby, is perhaps the least scarred by the House of Horrors.
Yes, it was one of the things that I found really, really interesting, kind of difficult to, sometimes difficult to sort of think about in a way when I was writing Girl A, was the idea that so much of the way the Gracie children are affected is down to kind of luck in an odd manner. It's to do with potentially, you know, where they were in their birth order, you know, where they sat in the sort of dynamics of the family. So I think you have Ethan and Lex, who are sort of the older siblings, and they had quite a lot of normality in their childhood before their parents became more extreme and isolated. So they kind of, there were particular teachers who gave them huge amounts of help and support and hope, really, kind of hope in education. And then sort of at the other end of the scale, you have the Noah, who was a very, very small baby when the escape took place. And, he is sort of, the speculation is he will remember very little about how his first few months of living went. And then I think in between, you know, those sort of extremes, there are some characters, Gabriel, Delilah, Evie, who have had a really, really difficult time because they've kind of lacked both the normality or the oblivion. So they really have been much more prey to their parents, to their parents' lifestyle, I guess. And one of the things that I really wanted to sort of think about, though, for each of the characters, I think, in a different way, is that they have each found different ways of coping. They've found different ways to be hopeful. you know, whether that's relationships in their life, whether it's through a sheer kind of survival instinct, which I think applies to Lex's younger sister, Delilah. Each of them is trying to kind of do their best to happen. I think that gives the book a real injection of hope, even in its kind of dark moments.
And I mean, there's so much normality in terms of the way the children have survived all of this, and then it goes back into the darkness of what they experienced. What inspired you, Abigail, to take on this topic?
I'm somebody who's always been quite interested in true crime. So I've kind of watched the Netflix documentaries and I've sort of listened to the podcasts that I'm sure lots of listeners might have listened to and watched as well. And I think, you know, when I was doing that, I was always really, you know, kind of gripped by these things that take place, and sort of, I think that there is a sort of slightly maybe morbid fascination about the dark side of humans and of the world. But I was always wondering as well, what happens after that? You know, sort of after the press have departed and after the kind of actions themselves are over, you know, what happens then in the sort of days and then the months and then the years that follow an event like this? And I think that's what I kind of wanted to focus on in writing Girl A. There were a few really kind of high profile cases that have involved quite young people and children, teenagers. So I think, you know, recently there was the Turpin case in California, and there was the West case in England a kind of great number of years ago, which really
Rosemary
involved
West.
Yeah, exactly. That involved really kind of teenagers, and if that's the case, you become defined very early on by this thing that has happened to you. I think, you know, in reading the first sort of lines, the children are known very much by their appearance in this kind of pixelated photograph. But I suppose to me that's only sort of the tip of the iceberg of their stories. And I think in writing Girl A, I wanted to see these survivors as kind of really human people who have a whole rest of their life to live. And how does that go then?
The fact that the parents have some sort of extreme view of religion, I don't know whether you're a spiritual person or what your commentary really is on that kind of extreme spirituality, if that's even the right word for it. Maybe religiosity is a better word.
It feels to me that, particularly in the case of father, who sort of drives the family into increasing isolation and extremism, that he very much uses religion as an excuse. I think he very much does not use religion with any kind of loyalty as to what it really means. And I think my view is that if it hadn't been religion for him, it would just have been something else, some other kind of route to isolation. And because I think that the thing that drives him more than anything are these kind of terrible failures that he has suffered in his life, and kind of terrible inferiority. And he really takes he really uses his family as a way to assert his own power, I think. And religion to me is almost the excuse that father uses to isolate his family and to impose his kind of world order on them, rather than being anything kind of potentially anything that he even really believes in. I mean, that's probably an open question for readers of Girl A as to whether or not they think that he is really a religious man in any way. But my view is that I'm not entirely sure he is. I think he's just a very kind of desperately sad in some ways, lost individual. Yeah.
Well, we will sooner or later see it on a big or a small screen, I believe, Abigail, because the rights for a movie have been sold.
Yes, yeah, that was a very surreal email that appeared in my inbox. Yeah, I'm such a TV addict, and so the idea of kind of seeing the Gracie family, seeing Lex on screen is just unbelievable, really. I think at present the idea is that it would be a limited series, so kind of 6 or 7 episodes. So yeah, that is just, I don't know what I'd quite do if I end up seeing it on screen. I think I'll be a bit overwhelmed, to be honest.
And jobs for presumably 14 actors, 7 juveniles and then 7 adults to play each of the siblings, girls A to C and boys A to D. Look, it's a terrific book. Girl A, it's called. And it's out now. The cost, I think, is about €15, available from your local bookshop by mail if it's not a bookshop that's open. But its author, Abigail Dean, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Pat.
Okay, thank you very much. Lovely talking to Abigail.